Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Tuesday, September 5th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so. So for all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus, happy to have you with me as we kick off this week of Bang the Book Radio. A little bit delayed, unfortunately. Both of our guests were unable to join us on Monday, so we wound up passing on that day. Took a little bit of a holiday break. I hate taking breaks. I hate taking holidays. But I had a lot of writing to do, so I was able to get that done over there at the website. And then, of course, you know, it kept you from having to listen to my voice for a full hour. But we'll hear from Kyle Hunter on our Wednesday edition of Bang the Book Radio here this week. We'll still call it the College Football First Look, but we're actually taking our College Football First Look with Sports Cheetah from WagerTalk.com here today. That'll be our Hunting for Winners segment, so that's coming your way here in a couple of minutes. Before I do that, a few things I want to mention. Of course, the contests, they're going on over at BangTheBook.com. Our daily streaker contest, monthly pick of the day, cash prizes for top monthly win percentage, top ROI, top number of units won. As you've noticed, if you've signed up with an email address over there, we are sending out a daily newsletter now with some links to our content. Again, I promise you that's not a big deal. That's all that we'll be sending you is that daily newsletter. So it actually helps you. You know, I mean, you get a chance to see what's new, what's going on over there at the website. Lots of good stuff. Yesterday, I posted my updated college football power ratings for week two. Posted the NFL opening line report for week one, also the college football opening line report for week two. We're going to be rolling out game previews here as we go throughout the week as well. So lots of good content over there at bangthebook.com for you to take advantage of. I'm proud of the work that we put out. We're holding our writers to a higher standard now because we're getting some new writers. We're getting some more analysis over there on the site, and that's what you want, and that's what we want to bring to you. We want to give you stuff that actually helps you win bets, become a better handicapper, become more informed. That is our end game with everything that we do at bangthebook.com, including this show. So I'm very lucky to have that platform and very lucky to have that ability to bring that stuff to you. Also, don't forget about that promo code over at DSI Sportsbook. Maybe you didn't do too much with week one of the college football season. Maybe you're looking to get involved here in the NFL for week one with that. Of course, they also have golf odds, NASCAR odds, MLB is still going on, boxing, UFC, you name it, they've got it over there at DSI. Another thing that they have over at DSI is a phenomenal promo code for our Bang the Book radio listeners. If you sign up over there with the promo code BTB and the number 25, you'll get a $25 free bet just for signing up. And then you'll get an additional 100% deposit match bonus based on the amount of your initial deposit for the sports book. And if you decide to go over to the live casino and give them a try, you'll get a 100% deposit match bonus over there as well. Very low rollover on that sportsbook bonus. That's something that's very important. If you need to get those funds, if you want to turn things over and go from there, that's very important to have a low rollover. And DSI offers one of the best promo codes in the business because of that low rollover. So, again, take advantage of that offer, BTB and the number 25 over there at DSI Sportsbook. Well, I recorded on Monday afternoon with Sports Cheetah, who was out on vacation with his family, still generously took some time out of his day to join us and talk about week one to week two of the college football season. Lots of overreaction. We talked about some games from last week, some betting opportunities from a derivative standpoint, some betting opportunities for this week. Lots of good stuff here on this Hunting for Winners segment with Sports Cheetah. All right, I'm joined now by Sports Cheetah from WagerTalk.com for this week's Hunting for Winners segment. Cheetah, how's it going today, man?
It's going, man. Just getting done with week one. Excited for week two. Started betting some games last night. And, yeah, happy Labor Day, by the way.
Yeah, happy Labor Day to you, too. I actually took Monday off with the show. Actually, our two guests weren't able to make it. So that's why I wound up taking Monday off with the show. But good to get back in the saddle here and have one of my favorite guests on early in the week. And, you know, I'm actually – it may be a blessing in disguise here a little bit that I usually do the college football first look with Kyle Hunter on Mondays. But the college football first look basically this week here is this segment with you. And week one to week two, one of the most interesting ones for a lot of different reasons.
Yeah, it really is. I should give everybody a heads up. I'm actually not even in town, so you guys might hear some unprofessional background noise. But it shouldn't be too bad, and we'll jump into everything, and I'll mute myself when Adam's talking. So if you get upset, don't blame Adam. It's my fault. About the quality, but I'm excited because there were a ton of moves yesterday, even more if you actually follow the Bet Online openers, which were ridiculously bad and soft. Like there were some, I think I ended up hitting like 20 games, but I ended up finding like seven, I think, so far that I've bet. when they were opened up at like Chris and Pinnacle and stuff last night. So I'm excited. I think it's going to be a good week. And, you know, you say that every week. It's good to be positive either way. And, you know, I had some rough beats in week one, just like everybody else, it seemed like. So hopefully that tide turns and we're good to go for the rest of the season.
And I laugh about it. And this is something that we have talked about in the past where, you know, a lot of people look down on BetOnline. A lot of people talk down about BetOnline, but I give them credit, man. They're putting those openers out there. Yeah, it's only $500, but if you can hit a couple limit bets on those, you know, if you've got a deep enough bankroll, that's still a pretty good grab and you're going to get some decent line value. And the one that stands out the most, I know a guy that we talked to on Twitter, Jimmy Shivers, picked this one up. He got Oregon at like -2 or -2.5, something like that at BetOnline. That line is 14 now, and it opened 10 at the Chris Books, at Bookmaker and those guys. So, you know, I mean, this is a number that's just continued to shoot up. But again, that's one of those things that you can take advantage of, and one of the reasons why we talk about having so many different outs out there in the market.
Yeah, absolutely. I used to now I just hit them once and I send them to friends and then they all move. I used to hit them though. You could get down, like you said, like $500, and once they move the juice or a point, you can hit them again. And a lot of times, you know, I get $2,000 down and hit it four times or something. So people make fun of them, but I mean, it's a grind, and the $2,000 on a couple really good games every week adds up. I remember a few years in a row, it was like the exact same amount. Like every year I made between like 20 and 22,000 on BetOnline openers, and I was like, people complain about them, but if like you can do it, you might as well. So for me, I never like to rag on them or South Point, for example, in Vegas, who were first to open stuff over the summer. You have to give those guys a shout out for sure. The Oregon one is one I bet too. We got -2 or -2.5, and you know, it's weird because that was a game of the year that I bet Oregon -3. And it moved up to like 8 or 9, I thought. And so why isn't BetOnline looking at those? I mean, they would have known is 8 or 9. There's a couple others like that. I'm trying to remember off the top of my head, but where they had a game of the year, at least something they could compare with, and they didn't end up doing that at all. And I'm kind of shocked, to be honest. And so for now, I, you know, take advantage of it, but they should be looking at where those lines closed. Oh, it was Clemson Auburn. They opened at 9. But that was bet from 7 down to like 4 before the season in the games of the year. And then the BetOnline opened at 9, or they opened Oregon 2. And then sure enough today, even at 10, someone went in and hammered Oregon at 10. It's all the way up to 14, which is kind of crazy. I think that's too high now. But sure enough, I mean, so far that's a 12-point move.
I've got that one 14.5, and I've been very public about my anti-Nebraska stance. I mean, last week I had the number 7.5 against Arkansas State. Obviously, it was 14.5, so I made some adjustments in my power ratings, but Arkansas State was outside the number for less than 3 minutes in that game and, you know, actually had a shot to tie it and possibly send it to overtime or go for two for the win there at the end. They had two shots on the 11-yard line late with about 10 seconds left or something like that. Didn't score, but, you know, still Nebraska is a team that I am very much against. And another one at BetOnline, while we're touching on those, and then we'll move away from this topic, Stanford actually opened +10 against USC. That number went all the way down to 4.5. Now it's sitting out there in the market at 6.5.
Yeah, that was one I missed the 10.5. And if I was sometimes, you know, if someone else just gets it first, then that's that, you know, because it'll be 9.5. My number 7.5 exactly. So for me, I would have needed 10 or 10.5 to make a bet. At 9.5, I passed. But then it opened. Yeah, it was 4 the other way. And I was like, man, I would have had a really nice setup to have +10.5 and -4 or something. So for me, I was upset I didn't get either one, because now I think at 6.5, 7, it's, you know, most of the 6.5s are juiced. I think that's a pretty good line. I'd lean USC just because I had it at 7.5, and I think general public after Stanford just demolished Rice in Australia, and then USC looked so bad against Western Michigan, I imagine Stanford will be a pretty popular dog this week for sure.
Yeah, I had that number 7 going into week one. I have it 7.5 now because I bumped up USC a little bit because of that line movement there against Western Michigan, where that was a number that shot up. I think it closed around 28, something like that. So I actually bumped USC up a little bit in my power rating. So now I've got that one at 7.5 as well. And that's a good segue into talking about that week one to week two contrast where you start making some of those adjustments to your power ratings. Now, Cheetah, I know that one of the things that you really harp on, one of the things that you really suggest to people that do power ratings out there is to make sure that you're evaluating based off of the closing line, because as we'll talk about here in a few minutes, there were some very misleading final scores in week one that, you know, if you're not using the closing lines, you may be evaluating your power ratings in the wrong direction. So let's touch on that a little bit here. Who are some of the biggest adjustments that you made up or down following the week one games?
Yeah, there was two. Else was Middle Tennessee State, even though this is a good example, you know, they lost by 22 or something. They were down 28-0. They ended up getting six or something. But the line that I had originally before I made a couple adjustments was like 9, and I moved them down to like 6.5 because I upgraded Middle Tennessee State later on in the summer. But even at 6.5, I mean, this closed 3, kind of shaded towards the 2.5 side. So I made an adjustment there for them, even though, you know, it looked like they were horrible. And Vanderbilt, the team I'm pretty down on in general this year, looked fantastic. So that was one I did. The other was Central Florida. And that was because, one, it closed around 17, and I had it 13. Also, they looked like I have a 25-1 shot on them to win the AAC, and I'm thrilled because USF has looked absolutely weird. And Charlie Strong might just be bad. And UCF, sure enough, just blitzed Florida International from the get-go. So I'm excited about that. But those were the two biggest moves in games, or I should say four teams from their games that weren't FCS ones, because I know you mentioned some of those FCS ones. And to be completely honest, I didn't move much of those. I mean, the fact that Baylor lost to Liberty and UNLV lost, you know, to Howard, I think it was, that's bad. And they should. I bumped them down a little bit, but I don't really have a gauge to see where I was, you know, in the market, because I don't power rate every FCS school. So I didn't know, you know, based on the market close and everything, if my number would have been short or high. So I'm kind of just waiting, you know, another minute to maybe bet those games. Although I'll be honest, when BetOnline opened Baylor minus 12.5, which is now up to 18.5, it's just moving on the screen as we speak. I bet that. So I thought getting two touchdowns or less with Baylor against Texas San Antonio, a team whose game against Houston was postponed, I thought that was a good bet. It turns out someone else thought it was good, probably even under 17. So that was one where, I mean, some of these are going to be an overreaction. I think the Idaho UNLV one's getting close. If that hits 10, I'll probably have to take UNLV, actually. So it takes balls, but I don't know if I'll be able to do it with UNLV. But some of these, like, you have to just trust, you know, some of your numbers beforehand and not really rely on one game in 1 week. I mean, a good example is a couple of years ago when Washington State lost to Portland State outright at home, and, you know, they ended up winning 9 games that year, and, you know, actually I think had a little bit of a chance to win the Pac-12 North. And I think their season win total was like 6 that year, or 6.5. So, I mean, they still exceeded expectations by a ton. And, you know, they probably were a really good buy for a few weeks, if I recall, against the spread, just because of that first perception against the Portland State game.
Well, and that's interesting, because I think from what I recall, you were fairly high here on UTSA for this season, a little bit higher than I was. And before I adjusted Baylor, I had that number at 16. I adjusted Baylor down a couple points. I got it 13.5 or 14 now, and it's moving away from my number. So, you know, maybe I shouldn't have done anything with Baylor. Maybe that's a case where I did overreact a little bit to them losing to Liberty. Also, you know, maybe UTSA is a team that I could potentially have a little bit higher now because I did make some adjustments to them based on, you know, what other people had. But Central Florida was the biggest change for me, too. I bumped them up 4 points because, like you, I had that number, I think, teen against FIU. And then they just blitzed FIU, like you said. And Mackenzie Milton looked really good at quarterback in year two of that system. So that took my Memphis and Central Florida number, you know, down to basically a pick 'em. I had Memphis pretty highly rated, and, you know, now I'm happy with where that number has wound up. So I like what you're talking about there in terms of, you know, making adjustments, not just based on the market, which is, you know, the most important factor to you, but also if you see a situation where a team, you know, is going to take that next step, and, you know, you probably do want to be a little bit more aggressive when you're making adjustments for a team that is in year two, you know, with a new head coach like Central Florida is with Scott Frost.
Yeah, that's one. I mean, that's why I bet, and I explained this on a few different shows and to people I was trying to explain this bet on. They're like, you bet Central Florida 25-1 to win the AAC, but you didn't even bet their season win total over. Like, how does that make sense? And I was like, you gotta grasp the concept of, like, a wide bell curve of variance on a team. And a team like Central Florida, who's had talent and been in a BCS bowl, you know, just 3 years ago, has a guy who is awesome as a coordinator at Oregon, runs really fast, gimmicky, up-tempo offense. like, there's a really good chance that he's just, like, really awesome in this second year. Like, they're just going to be, like, no one's expecting him to be this good because they've always had talent, this and that. They said that weird year they went 0-12 when everything was falling apart for them. And they were a surprisingly pretty solid team last year even. So, for me, it made sense when all the other teams kind of in their tier of my power ratings, like Navy, there's a few, like, Temple, Memphis and Houston maybe are a little better, but all of those teams were like 5.5 to 9 to 1, yet Central Florida was 25 to 1. So for me, it just made sense to take a shot. And, you know, this is, yeah, it's looking like everyone else kind of thinks that they're really, really good, at least better than they were 2 years ago when they were 0-12. And I think a lot of it has to do with Scott Frost and just those guys have already bought in and they know that they're going to run faster and a lot more plays than you, and they're going to do it successfully. And I don't remember exactly the number, but I think they ended up rushing for like over 400 yards, if I recall, in that box score. So they're a team to look out for, absolutely. And for me, you know, they were one I was hoping to look to bet against Memphis if they came out as like dogs. But sure enough, that's not the case. They're favorites, and I think it's one I'll probably end up passing on this week.
And another thing about it, too, is, you know, I mean, we talk about these new head coaching fits and we talk about, you know, teams that are going to run more up-tempo, UConn, for example, and they, of course, struggled quite a bit with Holy Cross there last week. But, you know, you have this situation at Central Florida where they're going to run up-tempo. They've got a new head coach, but it's the state of Florida. They have the athletes. They have the kids they need to put into this system. It wouldn't shock me, honestly, if they go out there and play really well against Memphis and I wind up adjusting them again going into week three.
Yeah, they absolutely could. And Memphis was in that weird game against Louisiana Monroe and like the monsoon. And they basically didn't get to practice their passing game yet. And they ran the ball every play. And it's going to be weird to see them coming off of essentially like a scrimmage. And you could say Central Florida's game was a scrimmage too, but at least you went through the motions without all these extra variables where Memphis really hasn't yet. And now they're going on the road, like you said, into a place that, you know, has so many athletes, and they get a lot of the extra like Miami, Florida State, Florida personnel that just don't make those schools. And Central Florida winds up picking them up. And so I think they're scary good. And I, you know, totally, if anyone wanted to bet them against Memphis, like I totally would say, you know, go for it. Memphis is, in their own right, you know, they're the better team. They have been the last couple seasons. But this might be kind of the change of the guard and the fact that Scott Frost has already built something that's just going to be tough to beat. And to be completely honest, Memphis should be able to score points. I'm really curious to see where this total opens because this one that I've circled to be over, you know, unless it opens 90 or something. But I'm going to be watching that closely. I don't know if it'll be today that they start opening or tomorrow for totals in this week too. But anyway, keep an eye on that for sure.
Speaking of totals, while you're on the subject and we're kind of talking about it in passing, there's one game I have to ask you about from a total standpoint, South Carolina and Missouri. I mean, Missouri just scored 72 points. They had a ton of offense there against Missouri State. You know, South Carolina beat North Carolina State, but they gave up over 500 yards in that game. That's the total that I'm most interested in seeing because I don't know if there's a number high enough. I mean, I'm sure there is. But I don't know if there's a number high enough that's going to make me go, I don't want to play the over here.
Well, you know what? It's interesting because I have South Carolina circled as like an early season over team. I bet them against NC State. I bet the over 49.5. And it actually, and it went up when we bet it, and then it came back down kind of to the same number when it closed. Someone like the under, I guess, in that game, which is fine because I know NC State's gotten a lot of pub and their defense is supposed to be really good. But the South Carolina offense is actually better this year, and I don't think their defense is nearly as good. They have a lot to replace, and then you saw it happen in that game. Obviously, they gave up over 500 yards. Somehow they won the game still. This is an interesting one, and I'm kind of upset that they're playing a Missouri team that runs so fast and just scored, what was it, like 111 or 17 total in that game. Like, I don't. This number is going to be pretty high. Even though I have South Carolina circled as a team to just kind of bet over for the first month, I'm afraid that this number will be too high that I'll have that opportunity. I might have to wait till week three in a South Carolina game. But if it's, you know, if it's anything under, I don't want to give away my number actually, so I'm not going to say it, but it's going to be tempting either way. I just don't see South Carolina the way NC State was able to put up that many yards. Granted, they turned it over and made mistakes, and that's why South Carolina got the win. You know, Missouri's going to be able to move the ball. And it's not like Missouri's defense is spectacular themselves. I mean, they just gave up 45 to Missouri State. So South Carolina's going to be able to move the ball themselves. I'm really intrigued by this total, too.
Well, and that is something you want to pay attention to. And when you look at a couple of the line moves that are going out there, and I wrote about this in the opening line report that I posted yesterday at bangthebook.com, you know, we saw South Carolina open this number actually opened 4.5, or it went from, I guess it opened pick, but it went to 4.5, something like that at Bet Online. And I was talking to you and I was talking to a couple of other people about this game. And I was like, prior to week one, South Carolina is not a dog on a neutral to Missouri. And that's what that line suggested. So we saw a pretty big overreaction there in that game. Now, of course, South Carolina won. So, you know, maybe that kind of did something in terms of the market. Then you look at a game like Marshall and North Carolina State. Marshall got severely outgained by Miami of Ohio. North Carolina State outgained South Carolina very badly, lost the game. But that was one where we saw a really early move in the market. This one's gone from minus 20 at Bookmaker and the Open to minus 24, and you have to look for those misleading box scores, those misleading finals that are out there, because you know, those are games that you're going to see movement on early in the week.
Yeah, the 20 was an open minus 119, so I didn't actually hit it, and I was hoping that it would stay, and it didn't, because my number is like 21.5, but it just sets up so perfectly to back NC State after those box scores. Honestly, the two sharpest moves late in the week, and I ended up betting one of them, and I had some money on the other one I didn't release to my clients, but were NC State at minus 5, and then Miami, Ohio, like the night before, was plus 1.5. And they closed minus 4, and NC State closed minus 8. Like, those were two of the biggest moves going into that Saturday. You look at the box scores without the score, and they were just dead on. I mean, they were absolutely, like, they got, like, perfect analysis. The sharp guys just crushed those, and they lost both bets. I mean, it just happens sometimes. But when NC State doubles the yardage from South Carolina, they should be covering minus 5 easy. You know, Miami, Ohio crushed Marshall and lost by 3 or 4 points. I don't remember exactly where it landed, but it's tough sometimes to do this, and you can be right and still be wrong. It's rough. And now, anyways, going to this game against NC State Marshall, it's like you're saying, it's setting up perfectly. I do my numbers Saturday night or early Sunday just so I have them all, so when things start opening up, I can bet them. And you know, when I made a note again, and I said NC State no matter what, and then I didn't end up betting it anyways. And so here I am looking at a inflated 24. So I'll probably end up passing or look to maybe betting like a first quarter or first half play, just because I think they know they beat South Carolina, you know, hypothetically beat them in the box score, and they're better. And I think they're going to come out and just blitz Marshall from the get-go.
All right. Now, I had a listener question here, and I want to touch on this, and then we'll look at some specific games and kind of keep this thought going about some of these, you know, week one outliers, and then, of course, some of these games that have moved around a little bit here as well. But this question comes from at MikeyDFS86 on Twitter. It says, not sure if I asked this before, but how do you know when to hedge or middle in college football? The example that he gave is that last night he had under 53.5 on the Virginia Tech game, only 17 points at half, decided not to middle it. And then, of course, as we know, that game wound up going over the total. I think it was 31-24. So just barely inched over. So, you know, Cheetah, do you have a certain blueprint that you want to follow in that scenario? Do you have a play on point? How do you play those?
Yeah, there isn't really a blueprint or like a formula or anything. I mean, I had under 55.5 and under 55, so I pushed half my bet. I won half of it, luckily. But at the same time, it was 3-0 with 5 minutes left in the first half. And West Virginia was on the 2-yard line. They went 98 yards to score a touchdown. And then with a minute left, Virginia Tech went the length of the field to score at the buzzer. So there was a quick 14 there. But even at 17, you're thinking, okay, fine, you know, that's fine. Things will settle back down. And then there was like 24 in the third quarter. So it was kind of felt like a bad beat or a bad push for me. I don't know. I would have thought to play over, you know, when it's 3-0 and you're almost halfway through the game. Like, you're winning the under so many times. And, you know, there's so many times, I don't remember what the live line was around that time, but it was probably pushing like, you know, 40-ish, maybe even a little bit less than that. And there's so many times that game just ends up, you know, being like 20-17 in a 3-0 game with like almost, you know, only 35 minutes left. I just don't think it was worth it in that case. Another one is I bet Texas A&M live minus 7.5. Well, up 34. Why are you with, you know, 17 minutes left? Why are you playing UCLA plus 28.5? Like, what's the point? Like, you're never going to lose that very often. And then sure enough, I found a way to lose. But it's one of those where I think you need to just kind of have a gauge on the actual game. Like, if you're winning that bet 9 out of 10 times or more, then probably just worth taking the win. You know, if you're sitting on like minus 7.5 and the live lines plus 13.5, and now it's like the fourth quarter and it's just kind of back and forth, and now you're realizing you know what, it's probably just going to be a flip. It all comes down to if UCLA scores on this drive, and I don't want to have any gamble on that. Then you jump in and play back, and you hope maybe you middle, or at least you go 1-1. In the cases you're so far ahead of your original bet, either pregame or an early live bet, that I wouldn't think about doing it very often. So that's my point of view, or I guess my philosophy. There needs to be something happening in the game that makes me feel like my original bet just is more of a gamble than it is an edge, or a likelihood that I'm going to win. And so in those two cases last night, I think they were good examples. You know, I just let them ride, and then I ended up going, a half of a win, half of a push, and a loss when they were so far ahead at one point in the game. I think it was just bad luck. You chuck it up to that, and I wouldn't really sweat playing back too often if I think what I'm getting at is you have to grasp that, you know, the weird beats or the weird runs and ends of games are going to get you sometimes. When you lose one, say this guy, maybe he had 54.5 on the under. Don't let that like try to change your philosophy or change the way you're doing things.
All right. So 17 points in the first half, has under 53.5 for the full game. The second half total came out 27. It wound up closing 27.5. So basically he's looking at a middle between 44 or 44.5 and 53.5. How does that influence your thinking process, you know, in terms of the number of places within your middle, with it being 9.5 point middle, and then also a lot of key numbers there in the upper 40s, lower 50s. Does that change your thought process?
It doesn't if you still like the under. I mean, like the way the whole first half played out was until the final 5 minutes was just dead on. I mean, Virginia Tech's defense is really, really good. I don't know if you guys even know this. I saw the stats last night. It was the most yards anyone's ever passed against Virginia Tech since like 2010. It was the most yards Will Greer's ever thrown for. It was like West Virginia had to do like career high type stuff and set records for the last decade against Virginia Tech just to get to 24 points. I mean, at halftime, you're not thinking, this bet doesn't look very good. I got it wrong and lucked out. There wasn't like a bunch of turnovers or something that killed drives. I mean, there was a lot of three and outs. There was a lot of just defense. And the freshman quarterback for Virginia Tech, I mean, they hadn't really opened him up much at all until that last drive to end the half, because they had to kind of hurry because there was only a minute left. They opened him up more in the second half, and they were able to move the ball a lot more. So I just, at that point, there was no reason in my head to ever play back just at all. Unless your whole goal in life is to try to middle. If that's the case, then yeah, 9-10 point middle is pretty good. But in that case, I think you're winning your under bets so often and could easily have gone under 27.5 in the second half. So I don't know, why give back the value that you have with your original ticket when there was nothing that happened in the game to make you think that, you know, it wouldn't stay under, and then it went over. So it's just bad luck. So you got to grasp the fact that some of the variance there is just going to go against you, but it shouldn't make you make decisions that I think wouldn't pay off more long-term, you know, more often. So it's tough. If he wants to message me, I can go into more depth, I guess, with him and his specific numbers. But in this case, I mean, this game, there's nothing. I mean, even if I had, you know, the exact number 44.5, like I considered actually adding second half under like a little bit more, just because I thought that end of the first half was more fluky versus the first 25 minutes of the first half. And, you know, I really considered it, and I didn't end up playing it, but luckily, but I just had no reason in that game or even the A&M game to think, why would UCLA all of a sudden score 30 or at least 28 in a row in this fourth quarter and I'm not score anything. I'm not going to try to middle. I'm just going to, you know, take my win. That's likely. And I would say don't overthink it. That's probably the best way to respond there is maybe trying to play a middle just because it lost, unfortunately, at the end after a bunch of points. That's probably just overthinking it at this point.
One other question I'll ask you, and this is more of a hypothetical. Let's say that, you know, you played the first half under 27.5. That came in easily. You've got under 53.5, 54 for the game, something like that. At that point, with the first half under, a cash ticket in pocket, with a good chance on the full game under, at that point, do you maybe look to play the second half over and try to go 2-1 or hit that 3-0 middle? Does that change your thought process?
Yeah, there's some people that'll do that. And, if you had already cashed first half under, which I guess I should have done some first half under, right? I don't think that's awful, because at that point you're still guaranteeing that you're going to win, you know, money in the game rather than, going one-on-one and juicing out. So that's the actual, like, psychology to that seems nicer, right? 2-1 at worst, maybe 3-0. So I think a lot of people do that. But really, whether or not you cash a first half under shouldn't determine your bet technically. Like there's no actual math or gameplay or anything that's happening in the game that is affected by whether or not you won a first half bet. Like, you should not be making your decisions based on past wins or losses. It should be a decision based on the actual, you know, game, what's happening, your number, et cetera. And the number was really good. The game looked like it was going to be a dead under. And so either way, I would never have bought out. That would have been one where I, you know, just held both and went 1-1, or maybe pushed part of it like I ended up doing. And, you know, it is what it is. So I know there are people that do that, and I don't say it's like don't do it either. I mean, I get it. I know why you'd want to just go 2-1 and then lock up, you know, what is it, 9/10 of a unit, or go 3-0 and win 3 units. And so if that's the case, if that's your approach, that's more conservative, I guess. But I'm pretty conservative in general. So I bet a lot of games and the volume's high, but I'm not like going crazy. My bet sizing's pretty structured. I don't have a ton of big plays. I even have smaller plays. So for me to say that I wouldn't, I think probably telling in that you shouldn't be basing decisions off of previous wins and losses, especially within the same game. And if anything, the fact that it cashed should, you know, that's going to be, if anything is predictive of where the final total is going to be, it's going to be the first half under winning easily. So that now the full game total is probably going to go under. And so that's why you should just hold it, is, you know, you're going to be winning at such a high rate, more so than you would if you're, you know, having a 9-point gap and trying to middle. And so anyway, that's kind of the full thought process there on that for me.
All right, one more question here then before we get into some of these specific games, and we'll touch on a little bit of NFL as well here to wrap up this segment. I know that you do a second half text message subscription service or club, whatever you want to call it there. You know, give our listeners a little bit of insight into, you know, what is the deciding factor for you? I'm sure there are a few of them, so it's not wording that question all that well, but what would be the deciding factors for you in terms of a live play or a second half play in a general sense? What are you looking for?
Yeah, I mean, you're looking for, I mean, some of it was, here's a great example. I didn't do it because I ended up betting some NC State -5, but they opened second half and I think was a tie game. It was tied. It was -3 and it moved to like -6 some spots second half. So the same people that were betting on -5 to -8 before the game saw the first half, saw that NC State was just crushing them in the yardage, and, you know, more predictive than anything for a final score is going to be how many yards you're gaining versus your opponent. And because yards over your opponent is going to lead to points. And so sure enough, that got crushed at halftime. You know, that's something that you look for though, like in those first halves. Another one was Miami of Ohio as well. I know opened 2.5, 3, closed 3.5, which is big for a second half total, which I think pushed if you got 2.5, pushed on 3 for most people. And then if you bet it late, you lost on 3.5 because they ended up losing. I think it was by 5 now that I'm recalling the way that played out. But the deciding factors for me have a lot to do with first half box score, what's happening, maybe possibly what I'm just seeing with my own eyes. I'll tell you, we bet 5 second half plays this week and went 4-1. The one that we lost was actually Texas, which was winning late in the fourth. They were only down 3. There was a 3rd and 19 for Maryland with their backup quarterback, and he just heaved it up into traffic, and they came down with it and ended up scoring a touchdown, and I lost on that. So I actually was really close to 5-0. But the first one was Wisconsin tied against Utah State. That was one where it just felt like they were going to just blow it open. But sure enough, I had Utah State +35 from game of the year, and that lost. So I went 1-1 overall in the game, which – I mean, who's going to think that in a tie game, like, or not even, it was 10-0, like, in the middle of the second quarter, I had +45 and couldn't cover. So that one was kind of unfortunate. Another one was Northwestern. Some sharp guys had bet Northwestern up to 24 before the game. Nevada's going more up-tempo air raid, so the total had gone way up. And, you know, that was, like, they were down 10, sorry, at halftime. And the number opened 11.5. It closed 13, but we bet -11.5. And they ended up, I think they won the game by a full touchdown. So they covered pretty easily whatever number you had there. But essentially, it went from opening 11.5 to 13. It's a good move just mathematically, because, I mean, odds are if they're going to win the game by, you know, a close game, it's going to be by 3. So that should have been 13 from the get-go. And I honestly probably still would have bet it. So that was one we hit. Ball State was one against Illinois. That was another one. I know you ended up betting Illinois, but probably not low enough where it cashed for you. But that was another one where the box score was pretty misleading. Ball State, I think, beat them out by like 100 yards and, you know, 7 or 8 or 9 first downs. And so at halftime, Ball State was actually down 8 or 9 points. I think it was 9. It was like, yeah, I think it was 9, 17 to, or maybe not. I don't know. It was 8 or 9. But I ended up betting Ball State plus a half. I was shocked it was they were even getting a half point, and I think some spots even had 1. So that was one that we hit. And there's one more I'm forgetting that we won, but it was Auburn against Georgia Southern. That was a great one. That was like a box score one where it was 10-7 Auburn late in the first half, and Auburn was winning the yardage battle like 168-2, and they were up by 3 points. A team that closed minus 34 favorites. Georgia Southern ended up actually getting more yards, but they didn't even end up, I think, scoring again. So Auburn scored at the end of the first half to make it a 10-point spread, and the second half total opened 14.5. So we bet that, and it got up to 16.5, 17. And, you know, Georgia Southern didn't even move the ball again. Georgia Southern had just scored on a fluky play. Their offense literally had negative yards. So I was pretty confident that Auburn was going to get, you know, at least 17 points in the second half. And unfortunately, that's all they got, actually, if anyone actually laid 17. I don't think anyone did, because most spots were just 16.5. So everyone won that one. But, yeah, it's a lot of just kind of gauging pre-market stuff versus what's happened in the first half versus current lines and this and that. And, you know, you can find some good value, I think, in those spots. And I generally have, yeah, I think 4 to 7 a week are probably about right. But yeah, so we went 4-1 on those first 5, and it's fun. A lot of people like it because they're like me or you, probably just actually following and watching the games all day. But then now they have extra action when they can get, you know, a second half play or something to throw in to the mix with everything else they've been betting.
Yeah, and I'll tell you one that I actually wound up playing in the second half on Saturday was I took Michigan over Florida. I had Florida plus 4. I took that before the Jordan Scarlett suspension announcement. I took that one earlier in the week. So, of course, I wound up with not the best number on that game to begin with, because it actually got as high as 6, I think. I know it was 5.5, may have actually touched 6, but Florida was a misleading leader at halftime in that game. They're up 17-13. They had done nothing offensively. I think Michigan came out -4, -4.5, something like that out there in the market. And I wound up grabbing the 4.5 because I'm like, okay, at this point, all they have to do is win the game. They've clearly been the better team. Plus, I didn't get a great number, and there were additional suspensions afterwards. So I'm happy to go ahead and buy out of this, especially, you know, seeing how this game has played out. So that was one where, you know, I wound up just sort of drinking the juice and saving myself a little bit there, you know, because I was paying attention to the game and paying attention to what was going on.
Yeah, that was not to throw it in your face, but a fortunate back-to-back pick sixes to even set that up for you, because I think you knew and you could tell by halftime that you were on the wrong side, and so you were able to get out. That was great. I mean, you had to do that. I think that was a good play. I'll be honest, I had dedicated that day, obviously, to a lot of football, but I promised family, because we're here on vacation, I said, I will go to the pool with the kids, like, for an hour, hour and a half, you know, around lunchtime. And it was during that first half, so I missed it. I ordered food from, like, the bar at the pool and saw the second pick six. And I was just like, well, you know, maybe this will end up being a close game. But then I had people texting me, actually, some Michigan fans that said, hey, do I bet Michigan second half? And I was like, I'll be honest, I haven't watched much of it. But when the actual team that's on offense has 3 points, or that's winning, you know, 17 has 3 points on offense, you know, that's probably telling, and it looks like they're not going to be able to move the ball, this and that. And then they started putting in Zaire and Franks were like back and forth, and that kind of, I think, confuses offenses anyways. So I think that was a good buyout in your call there at halftime. And I think Ford is, in general, an interesting team now going forward. I downgraded them a little bit, just because I had it at pick, and I don't think the suspensions were worth like 5 points, and they looked so bad. I downgraded them a little, and I left Michigan where I had it because I was already pretty high on Michigan versus everyone else, I think. And so I'm curious to see where the Gators go from here, because they were, you know, Phil Steele's number one surprise team, like national title contender. And, you know, at this point, they're in a pretty tough spot where they probably can't contend for a national title unless they run the table.
Yeah, and you know what? I think it's kind of a good learning opportunity for people as well for me to talk about, you know, getting out of a play that I did like. I mean, I had Florida minus 2.5 in that game before all the suspensions came down. Like you, I had that one down to about pick when I adjusted for the suspensions. And I just said, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and take Florida in this spot. You know, I think athletically they can play. I think defensively they can play. Obviously, for a while they could because they had the two pick sixes. But, you know, that was one of those things where you don't want to be stubborn. If you have the chance to correct a mistake, or you have the chance to, you know, even go a little bit higher on Michigan and give yourself a little bit of a profit in that spot, you know, do it. Don't be stubborn if something doesn't look like it's going to work out the way that you expected it to.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's like, and I'm as stubborn as anyone on my stuff just because I want to, like, Mom, my numbers are better than yours, or, you know, you have to learn that over time, and I've hopefully gotten better at that. But there's plenty of times, even before a game starts, if we get a move our way where there's something that happens that I don't like, or I talk to someone that points out something I never noticed before, you know, we're moving past the fact that even you're getting a nice, you know, middle at halftime. I'm talking about even before a game where I'll have like a minus, you know, say the NC State game at -5, and someone told me they're going to double them in yards. I never would have bought out and taken +8. But that's an example of, you know, pregame. There's been some times where I've just taken the middle before the game started and said, all right, actually, someone brought up a good point, and I feel like maybe I missed this on my initial bet. I'm in a good spot now where I, you know, have a couple middle opportunities on, say, a 6 or 7. So I'm just going to buy out now. And I think that's plenty fine. Like I said, I am pretty conservative generally. And so I think that's, you know, totally a good move if you recognize that you maybe either were one wrong or two, or, you know, could be wrong in the sense that you found out some new information. And once you kind of incorporate that into your assessment, you're able to, you know, make the change. So definitely a good point worth making.
All right, let's look at a few of these games here coming up this week. We'll start with Friday. Fox Sports 1 has Ohio and Purdue. And this one's really interesting to me. I actually had this game around a pick coming into the season, but I'm high on Ohio. I have been, you know, throughout the summer here and throughout the power ratings process. I did take Purdue last week. I know you took Purdue as well. You liked Purdue in that spot. We both thought that number was a few points too high, and Purdue wound up playing very, very well. Actually, at times, it looked like they might pull off the upset in that game. Now they're a 4.5-point favorite out there in the marketplace. Is this game a little bit of an overreaction in your mind?
You know what? I'm not sure because I have it 3, and I didn't make an adjustment for Purdue because I was, you know, I had the number like 23, and it was, you know, 26 or so, I think, is where it closed, maybe 25.5. So it's kind of close to that. But then they ended up, you know, crushing and almost beat Louisville outright. Part of it had to do with they recovered 3 fumbles, but they also threw 3 interceptions themselves. So the turnover overall ratio was pretty balanced. I think Purdue's really good. And I think Brahms, just, we talked about him, I think, on the show before. And I even mentioned in that game I was playing Purdue, and I think I said sprinkle some money line. Didn't end up winning, but it had a chance there. I think they're really good. And so at home against Purdue now, or sorry, against Ohio, I like it. I think that if I had to bet it, well, it's actually moving right now. I just pulled it up. It's been 4, and now it's 5, 4.5, 4.5, 5. So now I probably would pass. I was going to say, if it was 4 or 3, I'd probably just have to side with the Purdue side. And your sake, then, I guess, if you like Ohio, wait this out. Might get 6. Who knows? Maybe even 7. It's a Friday night game. It could be interesting. But I do think Purdue's here to stay, which is, you know, for them, maybe 3 or 4 wins. But they're going to – I mean, they're going to cover a lot of games early in the season. They're a team I'm looking to back. The early move here now on them, I think, is legit. So, you know, I think people are realizing that they're going to be a much better squad that hopefully makes a lot less mistakes. And honestly, defensively, they were really solid. The fumbles helped. But, I mean, Lamar threw for – he did his thing. But to keep it within, you know, under 40 points, a Louisville team that just can run it up, like, I thought that – I mean, that's – if you keep them under 40, you're covering +26 is, like, pretty often. So, you know, I think defensively is where they were, I guess, somewhat impressive in that game. And if that's any, I guess – sign of things to come, if they're able to at least limit teams somewhat, then, you know, they're offensively, they're going to be there with Brahman and blow a quarterback, and they're going to have a chance, I think, to actually, you know, stay in some games and win a couple.
Yeah, this is one of those ones where I probably will end up trusting the preseason work and the research that I did. And Purdue did look a lot better than I expected them to. I mean, I expected them to cover the number. I didn't really expect them to play a 7-point game against Louisville, but I mean, they had a lot of good momentum early. They managed to sustain some offensive production despite using 2 different quarterbacks in that game. So those were all really good signs for them. But this is one of those spots where, yeah, absolutely, I'll wait it out, see what kind of number I can get on Ohio. And you know what? If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. And then I can just make my adjustment from that point off. Purdue puts together two back-to-back really good performances. You know, then, yeah, I have to make some adjustments to them. And maybe I was too high on Ohio. And that's certainly a possibility. But, you know, I mean, again, this is one of those situations where you and I are in kind of different spots because you have clients, you're betting, you know, significantly more money than I am on a game. I've got readers and I want to be true to those readers and I want to be honest with them. At the same time, you know, I am also going through the power ratings process seriously for only about the second or third time. So, you know, if I'm going to learn the hard way, as long as I'm going to learn, I'm okay with that. And as long as I don't get burned again by a team the following week, you know, then that's something I can take a little bit of pride in. So, you know, this is one of those things where maybe I am being too stubborn, and we just had that discussion about stubbornness. But I don't know. I mean, it was also one game for Purdue. So, you know, do they deserve what appears to be a decent amount of respect that they're getting? I don't know.
Yeah, you have to be, I guess, I mean, that's probably why I didn't just jump and hurry and bet the Purdue -4, because my number said that's about right for one. But, you know, you don't want to just have this, I mean, I have teams, like I mentioned, like South Carolina overs, for example. You have this angle going into a season that you think you're going to have an edge in, you know, the first couple of games, and, you know, that's not always the case. You don't want to rush and just, you know, get stuck in this mode, oh, I got to bet Purdue every week, no matter what. So for me, I, you know, I was hoping it opened under 3. It didn't. And, you know, it was 4, and it was even -119 on the 4, which is more like, you know, 4.5. So it was just a pass, and, you know, there's some people betting it now, but, you know, all power to them. I think that's fine. I just, yeah, I'm with you. I think it's fine going into 1 week with one thing and then reassessing things in week 2. And, you know, if you're right about not only Ohio, but maybe Purdue just having, you know, a one game that was, you know, closer to a home game for them in Indianapolis than it was for Louisville, you know, just looking good, and, you know, they could take a step back and it's still Purdue. So I think that's a fine answer to any argument when you're talking about Purdue football. So, you know, you could be in a good spot. And at this point, though, like I said before, I would just wait it out later in the week or maybe even a 7. At that point, you know, Ohio's going to probably be, you know, a pretty strong buyback candidate for a lot of people, so you'll have to be quick. But I think you may have an edge there if you wait it out and get 6 or 7.
All right, let's talk about the team that Purdue just played, and that's Louisville. They're on the road at North Carolina. Louisville's only an 8-point favorite here, and I say only because I think a lot of people are probably going to look at that number, say it looks small. My number on this game is 9, and I was very, very low on North Carolina coming into the season. Both of us were validated last week because I know you were low on North Carolina as well with Cal. Outright upset as a double-digit dog on the road in Chapel Hill. Early start time for them, and they looked really, really good. So this is an interesting line here. Like I said, I don't see a whole lot of value on the number. I don't know if you do, but you know, to see this one sitting there with Louisville coming off of a bad performance, people will expect a bounce back. People will look at North Carolina and say, oh, look at what they did last week. This is going to be a fun line to watch, I think.
Yeah, I think it's right on where it should be. I think my number's 8 or 8.5, if I recall from yesterday. And it opened 6 some places, and I considered it. I'll say it was the closest for me betting because I was on Cal. I don't think North Carolina is very good. The number was way too high, and it's still close pretty high. I kind of made an adjustment for North Carolina up just because I was 5 points off, or maybe it's 4 points off my number in that Cal game versus where the market was. But, I mean, they lost outright. Cal threw as a quarterback like Bowers or something like that. I mean, they just threw all over North Carolina. And this is a Cal team that's not really supposed to be great offensively. Their thing was supposed to be, you know, defense with Wilcots coming over from Wisconsin as a defense coordinator there. Sure enough, you know, they were able to score 35 or whatever it was on them. And I don't know how Louisville doesn't get at least that, you know. And if that's the case, do you really think UNC is going to be able to get 30? And they were going Brandon Harris and the Surratt guy, like, every other possession back and forth all game. Like, never really gotten a real rhythm. And I'm not so sure that that's going to be beneficial against Louisville. So this is one I really considered at 6, or if you're a teaser player, at 8 down to 2 is probably a good option. I just think Louisville is going to take care of business. Again, they lost 3 fumbles against Purdue. Probably not going to be the case this time. You know, and even so, they can recover like they did against Purdue and win the game if they have to anyway. So I'm with you. I think this is an intriguing one just because North Carolina could be that bad. And this might be one where we're looking back in like just like a month, and we're saying, how in the world did we not put everything on Cal and Louisville in those first 2 weeks against North Carolina, because they're just that bad.
Where do you think this number goes? Do you think it goes up to 10?
Yeah, probably before it would go back down. But, I mean, for me, I had it at 8 or 8.5. So my thought process would say that the market just keeps it kind of in between the 7 and 10. But, you know, it's not going to go to 7 or less after what we saw with North Carolina last week. So if a sharp group comes in and lays it with Louisville, I wouldn't be surprised. If that's the case, honestly, it's probably like – it's probably just the nuts. I don't if it really moves up to like 10, even higher – it's probably just going to be a blowout. I just have the sense in this game where it really could be, but the number doesn't really justify making a bet now. So if some of the sharp groups later in the week do come in, I think that's pretty telling. So that's something to look out for.
Is that a challenge for you to know that from a numbers standpoint, it doesn't look like a play, but then you have this intuition, and you know that's something that you've developed over a lot of years of watching the markets, over a lot of years of watching football and paying attention to these things. You know, you have this intuition that this game could be a 3-4 score type of thing. Your numbers say not to play it. Do you fight with yourself about that? Or are you at a point now where you go, you know, my numbers have worked so well for me in the past. I need to trust them. I'm going to trust them.
You know, and there's some intuition to it. I think I've even talked about that before, where really like a sharper older guy has mentioned that he thinks it plays a bigger role than anyone really thinks, especially like the math model guys. But I would say for me, it's just like understanding the actual matchups a lot. So like the X's and O's of a game where, here's a good example, like Memphis, Louisiana Monroe in the monsoon was going to be a running game like over and over. That was all they could do. And Memphis has a much stronger run game against a ULM team that can't defend the run. And on the reverse side, ULM doesn't run very well, and Memphis is going to probably be able to slow them down. The game moved, like the number should have been like 24 where it was sitting for a while, and it closed like 28. And that was one where I totally get why Memphis got bet, because of the situation and the actual X's and O's of how you literally knew the game was going to get played out. And so the number said not to play it, but you know, sometimes you do. And so if the X's and O's and the scheming and the game planning, or if you get some information on, you know, how a certain team's going to attack someone else, you know, that makes a difference to where a number in a power rating projection doesn't necessarily, you know, cover it all or cover all the bases. So for me, I'm definitely used to it. I'll make plays where the numbers are about right, just because I think there's an edge, you know, the X's and O's, whether it's that intuition or even just like a situational spot, this and that. You definitely have to incorporate everything into finally making a bet, and it's not just 100% numbers.
All right, how about TCU and Arkansas? This is one of the biggest movers of the week so far. Arkansas opened a 2.5-point favorite at Bookmaker. Now TCU is a 3-point favorite at Bookmaker. Looks like the odds makers just got caught with a really bad line here.
Yeah, I'll be honest. This is one I didn't hit yesterday. I was just planning on waiting and betting TCU money line at plus money. I have them a favorite. Or if it got to 3, then I was going to just bet plus 3. I didn't want to take the 2.5 when I can just get like plus 1, you know, 30 or so. And I didn't end up doing it, unfortunately. And then it moved this morning. It woke up and, you know, now they're favored by 2.5 or 3, which is where it should be. So one of those where, you know, I get why it moved. It didn't move like right away when it opened. So in my head, I was like, well, you know, maybe it'll sit and we'll be able to take it, you know, in a couple of days when money lines start opening and someone else beat us to it this morning. So that's one of those things where I'll have to just make, like, there's a lot that's moving right now and has been moving like this entire call. You know, like Alabama just got blitzed. That was one at 41.5. I bet a little bit smaller. It's up to 44. Syracuse is moving. There's been some others as we've been doing the call. And I think Arizona State just moved off of 3 to 3.5. You have to be watching, but it looks like there was an early Monday morning group that actually moves these numbers, betting it everywhere. So in the future, I probably won't be able to wait for, you know, TCU plus money in a game where I just would rather bet plus 130 than plus 2. Anyway, but as far as the TCU Arky game goes, it's a perfect move. This is actually, this one in Louisville were the two of my 7 that I released that were like the next two. And I decided to wait on both and, you know, got burned, so to speak. You know, I may end up playing in some fashion, whether it's a derivative, like a quarter or half bet, or if I just bet it anyways when I start talking to other people that know more than I do. So we'll see. But that was a good game to mention that just moved this morning that, you know, I missed out on. And so, you know, going forward, I might not be able to wait in some cases like I have been in the past.
Let me ask you this, because a lot of times our listeners that, you know, I mean, can't do this regularly, that is a problem for them, that they don't get lines before they start moving. So in a situation like this, if you have TCU, a 2.5, 3-point favorite out there, you know, at what range would you play that down to? You know, if you are somebody out there, public bettor, you know, just does this for fun, does this to because they enjoy it. You know, they didn't get the +2.5. They probably didn't even get +1.5, which I actually grabbed a bet online. What do you recommend for them? I mean, is it still okay to play it there as long as you're getting 2.5, something below the key number?
Yeah, I mean, if you need to have action on the game or you like TCU, then, you know, you see a move from 1.5 or 2.5 as dogs to now favored by 2.5, you know, it's probably not going to benefit you to wait until the end of the week, you know. So I would just take it now. There's not a ton of value, you know, on ones and twos anyways. They don't land there very often. Arkansas, I think, has some problems defensively stopping the run, and their new 3-4 defense, which I think TCU will be able to take advantage of to an extent, and they're not going to be able to run like they did on Fort A&M themselves, obviously, you know, against the TCU defense, it'll be pretty good. So in general, I would say, yes, take it before a 3 if you can because of the move. If you were going to like them and take them anyways, you know, worst case, if it closes, you know, 1 instead of 3, you're sitting with 2 or 2.5. I mean, that's not a huge difference versus if it went to 3 or 3.5 and then you bet that. That's a big difference when you could have had 2 or 2.5. So you kind of have to understand the value of which numbers going which direction, you know, are more meaningful than others. And in this case, you need to get under 3 if you're going to like it and bet it anyway casually on Saturday. I think earlier in the week in this case would be better.
All right, I'm going to pull a little bit of a curveball here and change things up a little bit because I have kept you a little bit longer than I wanted to since I know that you're on vacation. I do apologize for that. There's one more college game I want to touch on that I want to ask for some very brief, you know, nuts and bolts NFL analysis for week one. Let's touch on the holy war between Utah and BYU. BYU, 1.5-point favorite out there in the market. Last 2 weeks, they have not looked good. Did not look good against Portland State in week one. Did not look good against LSU in what wound up being a really bad spot. Last week, Utah knocked off North Dakota as they were supposed to. Interesting line here, and obviously this is a big, big, big-time rivalry. You know a lot about it, so I figure it's a good time to ask you about this game, and you know it's one that you should know inside and out, so I'm curious to get your thoughts on it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited to have the rivalry back. It went away for a couple years, but I was surprised that it moved, or I should say moved. The game of the year line was like 3 or 4, depending on the site or the book, and you know they were a dog yesterday. BYU was they opened -1.5, and Utah got bet to the point where they were -1.5, and it was one that I took actually. I ended up betting BYU. I didn't have any reason to think, you know, people are going to say like they didn't even pass the 50 yard line against LSU, or they you know it was 97 yards total. I think they couldn't score, and then Portland State they looked bad. It's true, but you got to remember, I mean, that even in in like Louisiana where they played this in the Superdome against LSU, that game ended up closing like 13.5, 14, which is where the line was before the change, which means the real line, if you give 1 or 2 points a home field, that now over to LSU's way from the change of venue in Houston, you know, that real line was probably about 11.5, which is where I had it on a neutral. I made no adjustment really for LSU. They played really, really well considering they had so many guys on defense actually out of that game. It speaks to their depth when some of the suspensions and injuries clear. You know, maybe they're better than I expected going in or was hoping. But I didn't make much of an adjustment. So if this team's a home game, you know, home team in a rivalry game, they've lost the last 8 or 9. The head coach used to be the defensive coordinator at Utah for years until he went to BYU last year to be the head coach. He knows the ins and outs there. He knows them as well as anybody. You know, I think it's a really good spot to back BYU, and now you're getting a number that's cheap, unless you really think BYU is way worse than where the markets, you know, essentially had them in the last 2 weeks, which I can see why you'd think that if you watch the games. But remember, they could play LSU this week, and where things have happened, they could, you know, keep that game, you know, to a one possession game and ultimately win if they, you know, things are weird. Liberty's not beating Baylor, or Howard's not beating UNLV very often, but that was just the one Saturday it happened to happen. So I guess it doesn't make much sense. But the case for BYU is that they just, you know, played poorly some, but you got to rely on the market numbers. You got to rely on your numbers going into the season. And, you know, BYU under a field goal, I think now they're just about 1.5 everywhere. I think so. There's still a little value there. My guess, though, is that it doesn't really move to the point where it's three or four, just because there's people that are out there betting Utah. And my guess is, if you wanted to bet BYU, you're not in a rush now. I think if you could get them as a dog, getting the 1.5 point, it was worthwhile. Laying 1.5 when I don't think it's going to get to three, you maybe can wait and get pick later if there's some Utah buyback. The move on the screen to 1.5 was, I think, just us. So from what I know. So for there to be some buyback wouldn't surprise me at all. So I wouldn't rush to bet BYU, but that is one that I've bet this week and I think is going to be a winner, actually. I really like the spot for him.
All right, so let's talk NFL here for a second. We can, of course, talk more NFL on Friday with our Super Contest segment and break down a little bit more of the card, analyze a little bit more of the card. So I don't mind just mentioning it in passing here on this segment early in the week. But these NFL numbers have been up for a very long time. Same theory as college football, except college football, we got the FCS games. And then, of course, you know, that we've got – it's just a less it's just a less efficient market in college football no matter what. So as you're looking at the NFL card here this week, Cheetah, again, these numbers have been up for a very long time. What advice would you have for our listeners out there?
Well, I think my advice would be to trust, like, whatever early numbers you've been using for NFL in the past. If they've had success, then great. You know, don't try to change too much. There's been some change in the lines. You know, there's been teams like, say, Miami open -3 versus Tampa Bay, and now Tampa Bay is almost -3 themselves. There's been the switch because of the QB situation for the Colts. You know, the Rams now are, you know, laying 3 instead of, or 3.5 even, instead of being 3-point dogs. So there's some moves and stuff. And if you got in early on some of these, then great. I think you're in good spots. But I wouldn't really tackle week one any different than you would, you know, week 7 or week 8. You just go with the numbers, you go with your reads, and, you know, you have to make a play. I think some of the moves, so this, I guess this is the idea, is you're looking at, you know, the current numbers. Some of them I think were warranted. Some of them I don't think were. So there's probably a few spots where I'll bet against the early moves. There's one in particular that I like. I will not save since I haven't released any NFL yet to guys. But I think people maybe overthink somewhat week one NFL when it's really no different than any other week other than it's the first game they play in a season that's just an arbitrary slate of 16 games, you know, that, you know, who you play in what order and when it officially starts after preseason doesn't really mean much. So I would say trust your numbers. You know, go against some of the earlier moves if your numbers say to do it. If there's some lines that are still short or high or whatever, you know, and you think so, then fire away. And, you know, just take notes as you're watching the game Sunday or going through box scores. And like we kind of talked through and went through with college football games from Saturday, you'll do the same thing with the game Sunday in the NFL as you're capping your week two NFL. So, yeah, just put in the work and, you know, hopefully we're all winners on the bets we play. But the only thing we can really do is just try to set ourselves up to be, you know, holding good tickets or good numbers and in good spots to win the following week.
Well, and again, Cheetah, I have to tell you, I genuinely appreciate you taking time, you know, out of your vacation, away from your family here to record with us. And it is such an important week with all the overreactions from week one to week two. So it honestly means the world to me that you joined us today. Thank you so much for that. What's going on over at wagertalk.com right now?
Yeah, man, there's no problem. I just was going to be busy later, so I know you had to record earlier, but I think it worked out for us since it's Labor Day. We can go celebrate with friends and family a little bit. But yeah, Wager Talk, if you want to get my plays for week two, I generally hit some people that don't know, I hit some openers Sunday, and they'll move. So if you're not a guy that can bet openers at Chris or Five Dimes or Bet Online or any of those offshores, then maybe don't buy a week package. You can just buy, you know, a weekend package, which will include a lot of plays that I release Friday before the game Saturday. So I kind of have two batches that I release, you know, the opening ones and then another batch later in the week. So there's options there on Wager Talk you can look at, you know, whether you're buying a week at a time or just the weekend. But I think both will suit depending on your, I guess, capabilities or the way that you attack firing on these games. And yeah, thanks again, Adam. I really do appreciate you having me on as well. So enjoy your break, your holiday, and good luck tomorrow as you get back into it.
All right, thanks a lot, man. Remember, you can follow Cheetah on Twitter, @SportsCheetah, and of course then also that podcast you site that he does as well. Lots of good stuff over there with that. So thanks again, Cheetah. We'll talk to you on Friday. Really, really fantastic segment there with Sports Cheetah. I'm very lucky to get the chance to talk with him every week, to consider him a friend and a colleague. It's a lot of smart stuff on those segments, and of course, He has a lot of good insights on Twitter as well, where you can follow him at Sports Cheetah, and good stuff on that Podcast U channel that he has as well. Twitter handle at Podcast U in Vegas. I believe it's actually all the way across there. So I want to make sure that I get that right here this time, because I didn't get it right on Twitter on the last time I tagged him for the show. Coming up on our Wednesday edition of Bang the Book Radio, we have flip-flopped Sports Cheetah and Brian Leonard. It just works out better for both parties. So our sports wagering talk segment with Brian will come up on Wednesday, as well as our college football first look with Kyle Hunter of huntersportspicks.com. On Thursday, we'll have Brad Powers from bradpowerssports.com, also Rolf Michaels from wagertalk.com. And then on Friday, our first Westgate Super Contest selection segment with picks. I'm doing that on my own here this year with the Bang the Book podcast entry, but that will be coming your way on Friday morning. It'll be recorded Thursday evening. I will more often than not touch the Thursday game. So I'll give you as many of the plays on the card as I have at that point in time on Thursday evening. We've gotten the premium service from our proxy, Vegas Maddie, of footballcontest.com. So my picks aren't due until late Friday night. So I may take some extra time on those, may look over some things from the practice reports and all that type of stuff on Friday. So I will give you as many of the Super Contest plays as I have at that time when we record on Thursday nights for Friday. And we'll also get some insights from Cheetah in that segment as well, who's in both the regular Super Contest, which now has over 2,000 people, well over actually, 2,000 people for this year. And then he's also in the Super Contest Gold, which is up into the 60s in terms of number of entrants. That is a winner-take-all contest. So some good stuff coming your way with regards to the Super Contest. And then also Brent from DSI Sportsbook will join us for the odds report. He'll tell us where the sharp money is in both the college football and the NFL betting markets. So that'll be a great way to wrap up this week on Bang the Book Radio. That'll do it for me today. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. And I will talk to you again tomorrow.